Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by Coordination.com, hosted on JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts, found on iTunes, Stitcher, JitteryMonkey.com, Facebook, Twitter, and this particular one, of course, the Five Heart Podcast, available, as you know, Coordination.com as well. My name is Greg Mahochko, and usually I'm introducing Haas Reuter, but he is, as we know, a non-traditional college student, and he's working through some finals. And he said, "You know what, man?" He said, "I might not be able to be available until Thursday the 14th." I said, "That's all right. We're going to fill your role for a change. And we were going to have a three-way conversation, a three-way dance, if you will, a triple threat match of sorts with another Coronation contributor. But since Haas had to bow out this week, we're just going to have a nice one-on-one discussion for the first time on the Five Heart Podcast. I want to welcome, again, from Coronation. He contributes in many areas, but his emphasis, at least lately, has been Nebraska ball, and that is Patrick Gerhardt. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be on here.
So let's talk. Obviously, it's been a very exciting week in Nebraska, University of Nebraska Husker athletics, from the weekend activities and a big, big upset win for the Nebraska men's basketball team. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about you. Let's get to know you. How long have you been with Coronation.com?
This is my third season covering Nebraska ball for Coronation.com. For some reason, after the first season, you folks decided to keep me on, and so nobody has decided to replace me yet. So, yeah, I'm still here at Coronation writing about Nebraska ball.
Well, that's fine, because after the other events, you know, and everything else that's happened this week, I believe it was you that said that begged me not to ever leave Coronation. I can officially say now, as of this week, that the Five Heart Podcast is the number one podcast on Coronation.com. I wasn't able to say that, you know, the last year plus of the Five Heart Podcast existence because of our good friends Tweety and Pat at the Big Red Copcast. I always thought that those guys had a phenomenal presentation, but much like LeBron took his talents to Miami, to South Beach, and then back to Cleveland, much like Stan Kroenke packed up the Rams and moved them to Los Angeles. The boys at the Big Red Cobcast have taken their talents elsewhere, and we do wish them all the best in their future endeavors. But Patrick, 3 years now of Nebraska ball, and you know we talk about Nebraska ball sparingly, not as much as we should here on the Five Heart Podcast. And I'll be the first to admit that, but there was a lot of excitement around Tim Miles hiring, and that's we're going back several years now, making it to the tournament, and then we had a lot of attrition from some players deciding they just didn't want to play basketball anymore or going pro. We've had a lot of good graduates over the years. What is the big standout, or what's the big difference in this year's team?
There's a few things from last year. In fact, from the last few years. One, we've got a team that on paper is probably 10 miles best. Not just the starting five, but also the bench. We've got guys coming back with fairly decent experience, not just from playing for Nebraska, but for playing for, one case, Georgetown, another one, Louisville, another one, Miami. Those are the ones that start. But those guys coming in have good experience. They seem to be meshing well. You hear that term a lot going into the season, but it seems like these guys are maturing as the season goes on. The style of play, while still troublesome at times, is getting better as the season's gone on. We're 10 games in, and Nebraska easily had the best game they've had all year, if not for probably about 3 years, Tuesday night against Minnesota. This year's got a team that could, if they keep things in check, compete for at least the middle of the Big Ten.
Which is, you know, I guess if it was almost any other team in the Big Ten but Nebraska, you would say, oh, gosh, that's a letdown year, you know, potentially. I know being here in the land of Lincoln, Illinois, of course, has had some terrific basketball programs over the years, but not really many since Bruce Weber left. So, you know, they've been down and continue to be down. I think they actually lost to Eastern Illinois in their final exhibition game, you know. So they would kind of – they expect to be the upper echelon. Of course, you have the Michigans, the Indianas, Michigan States, Ohio State. I mean, you've got some really good programs in the Big Ten who would look at the middle of the pack in the conference as, again, being a letdown year. But let's face it, we're Nebraska, and basketball has never really been our strongest area of athletic competition. So middle of the pack in a Big Ten conference is we'll take that. I mean, that's a step in the right direction.
No, I mean, it really is. And I'm probably going to get some crap for saying this, but honestly, if there was a team, this is a bad year to reference them. But if there's a team in the Big Ten that I would say Nebraska not necessarily wants to model themselves after, but if they follow their path, it would probably be pretty good. And that would be Iowa. They're a team constantly in the middle of the Big Ten, occasionally fight off the big guys at the top, but you know, they make the NCAA tournament every 2-3 years, usually almost always in the NIT, bringing in some pretty decent players, all conference players every once in a while. And they go above and beyond a lot. And I think if Nebraska basketball gets to that point, I think you'd have some very happy fans. At least for a decade,
right.
If Nebraska, if they do it for, you know, 8-10 years or so, but they don't go beyond that, then you're going to see some restlessness, as with any fan of any sport should be. But you know, if Nebraska could get to that level, I think that would be a huge step forward for this program. It really hasn't seen much of the light of day since Danny Nee days back in the 90s. So,
let's talk a little bit about. I mean, you mentioned that Nebraska has some, you know, not just players with Nebraska experience, but you mentioned, you know, some really good programs, you know, Georgetown, Louisville, and although I hate to credit Miami with anything, I mean, Miami. But so they were able to bring in some good players, but at the same time in the offseason, we also saw a little bit of attrition. I don't know why I keep – that's, you know, second time I've used the word attrition, but guys like Ed Morrow – junior who left, and he's a, you know, a legacy because his dad played football at Nebraska. So what at that point, I mean, at the end of last season, it's like Tim Miles was on a bit of a hot seat. What about Miles, either his personality or his coaching? I know there was the famous self-imposed Twitter exile last year when some of the comments became a little too harsh, and he said, you know, I'm going to go away for a while, may, you know, concentrate on other things. What is it about Tim Miles that he's able to attract some of these transfers to Lincoln? Because, you know, it's Lincoln, and Bo Pelini famously said, you know, allegedly anyway, that it's hard to recruit to Lincoln. Mike Riley, for any of his other faults, managed to recruit to Lincoln. Tim Miles is able to bring some of these transfers, these D1 transfers into Lincoln. What is it about him, or what is it about the program that is so attractive?
Well, right now, in the program's aspect, the university finally, a few years ago, started dumping money into it. You've got the new training complex, the Hendricks Training Complex. You've got Pinnacle Bank Arena, which not just is an arena, but built up an entire entertainment district around it with the city of Lincoln. You've got Nebraska moving into the Big Ten Conference. Big 12 was good. At least the Big 12 was good back when we were there.
Sure. We made all the difference is what it was.
Yeah. I wish I could say that. But, you know, even a lot of those teams are having down years with the exception of Kansas now. But, you know, that helps in terms of what would attract them to the area, Lincoln. Miles, you know, he's a really personable, very likable guy.
He is.
And honestly, he works his butt off, you know, not just on the practice, not just in the office, but also on the recruiting trail. And I think that's paid dividends. And it's paid dividends in a time where transfers are a pretty normal case. I can't remember the statistics. I mean, I think the average is like at least two or three transfers a year for pretty much for Division 1A basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 300 some teams. And I could be wrong on that, but it's a fairly high number, and it's gone up considerably over the last few years. So the fact that he can go in and get an Isaac Copeland out of Georgetown, a James Palmer Jr. who played a lot at Miami. I mean, a Miami team that made the Elite Eight, I think, 2 years ago. The fact that he can go do that really says a lot. And honestly, the third thing that we talk about all the time in football, our fan base. We've had multiple losing seasons over the years, and Pinnacle Bank Arena, especially for like the big games, we show up, and I think that goes a lot farther than you realize. Even in, you know, when you consider we're going for these kids who are going up against teams who might be playing in the Atlantic 10 or the Big East, you know, basketball conferences.
Sure.
But they play in, you know, places that are 1/18th the size of Pinnacle Bank, and, you know, not everybody shows up to those games. So, I mean, I think a mixture of those really has helped out Nebraska basketball over the past few years, bring these guys in.
How many games do you take in at the Vault?
Well, I used to take in as many as I could, and then about a little over a year ago, I had a kid.
Which I can't wait to talk with you about that, and we'll certainly get into fatherhood here in a few minutes.
It's dropped my time at the Vault considerably, but it's been totally worth it. So
what, as you said, you know, those big games, and we'll use this Minnesota game. You know, it was a top 15 Minnesota team earlier this week. How does the crowd show out for a game like that versus, you know, maybe an unranked opponent or a non-conference opponent? Is it still a fairly decent crowd, or is it, you know, the same crowd but maybe just a little bit more energy? What's that experience like? I was one of the first people into Pinnacle Bank Arena just as they were doing the final, I guess, preparations for it years ago before it ever opened up. I went up to Lincoln. In fact, last time I was in Lincoln, and I did an audition to be the women's women's public address announcer for women's basketball. Obviously didn't get the gig, and they thought that it was crazy that somebody from Illinois was auditioning anyway, because they're like, you know, we only pay per diem. You know, it's not a full-time, you know, job with benefits. I'm like, yeah, it's okay. I work in radio, you know, I'll find a job. You know, that didn't work. But I remember being there on a rainy, like September or October afternoon, and I was impressed with it being completely empty. I can't imagine what it's like when it's full and there's that, you know, capacity crowd in there and they're just going crazy like they did against in that game against Minnesota.
You know, even the smaller games, it fills up pretty well. It doesn't totally fill up, but the top two, the first tier, there's basically three separate tiers. First tier fills up pretty well. The only time the student section really doesn't is during holidays. You'll see a big drop off during those. Second tier does pretty well. The third one's where things get a little patchy up there. But I mean, people show up even for the lesser games. But it's the Minnesota games like Minnesota the other night where the fans really show up. Even if Nebraska's look like they're going to get blown out of the water, the fans will show up, and I think that's a testament to the conference we play in. Indiana's down this year. They've got a new coach. Crean's gone. I would be surprised if that place wasn't near full for that game. I mean, just to give you one example.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, this team, where they're at, 10 games in, and then having that nice win, you know, 10-point win. You think Tim Miles has done it before. I mean, he's gone on the road. He, you know, for a little while, it was Michigan State that Nebraska always would seem to upset. But at home in front of the home crowd, a 10-point win over the number 14 team in the country. And anybody who read your write-up on coronation.com, Nebraska jumps out to an early lead, and at no point did they ever feel like that was a game that they were could lose. You know, isn't that the kind of the feeling that you got watching that was, hey, you know what? We're not only going to be competitive in this thing, but let's just go out and have some fun and let's just win the gosh darn thing.
No, I agree. And I'd like to start by saying going into this season, it was very hard to gauge how this Nebraska team would be. Last year did not go well. We had seven departures, including leading scorer Ty Webster. Glenn Watson Jr. was the number two guy, and he came back. We had two guys, Isaac Copeland, James Palmer Jr., who had transferred in, never played in the Scarlet and Cream. And you talk to anybody who followed basketball, everybody's just automatically guessing Nebraska would be at the bottom because of history. And there was no real proof that they would do anything. And as the season has gone on, they have progressively gotten better. They do. I mean, don't get me wrong. They've had some bad losses, but I think they've learned from them, unlike past teams, and they've progressed on. Minnesota, Nebraska came out, punched Minnesota in the face, and never let up. Now, the goal here would be to do this the rest of the season, which is tough. I mean, they're college athletes. They've got 30-some games a season to play, depending on how far they go. It's going to be tough to do that, but they're in the middle of a four-game stretch where they're playing four ranked opponents, starting with Michigan, and it's going to be tough. If Nebraska can stay consistent, they should do well. They really should do well. But let's see how they do against Creighton. Let's see how they do against Kansas, who got beat last night. before we really kind of gauge, I feel like before we can really gauge how well this team could possibly do this year.
I like that you mentioned Creighton. Of course, that is a game coming up this weekend. But it also is fitting that I'm having this conversation with you and not our self-proclaimed, he admits it, very own coronation.com Jasker in Haas Reuter. You know, he claims, he's like, well, you know, Omaha's right there. I'm a Gretna native. You know, and that's not Haas. I know you're listening to this. That's not like a Haas impersonation. That's just me paraphrasing what you've told me.
He's a complex man.
And his made only more complex by his affinity for Coors Banquet. that sparked an interesting Tuesday morning conversation in the Slack chat room about beers. So that is – it really has – and I don't know, maybe it's – maybe it has just been since I'm trying to word this in a way that makes sense. Maybe it's just my own perception or observation, but it seems to me that since Tim Miles came around, that Nebraska-Creighton matchup has been a little bit more intense. The rivalry has been a little bit more intense since Nebraska joined the Big Ten, which, I mean, obviously it's a non-conference either way. Is that just my perception or just my observation because I've kind of started following Nebraska basketball in the last few years, or has it always just kind of been that intense and I'm just now kind of noticing it, or has there really been an uptick in the intensity and the competition between these two teams?
Well, if the intensity has gone up, it sure hasn't shown on the court because Tim Miles has yet to beat Creighton. And in fact, lifetime, I think he's like 1-13 against McDermott. And this goes back when they were coaching against each other in like Division II ball. for a while there, Nebraska Creighton would go back and forth. Doc Sadler did okay against them. Barry Collier's, I think, around the time when Creighton started getting really good. And that's when it started getting hot. But last few years, if anything, it's a bitterness from the Nebraskan side because they haven't yet to beat the city up north, so to speak. But you know, it's frustrating, and Nebraska just hasn't lost to them. They've been blown out of the water,
right?
And until the last couple weeks, where Creighton's shown some issues on defense. and Nebraska's actually improved. I kind of thought that it was going to be another year like that, but after these last 2 weeks, I feel like Nebraska's got a decent chance against them up at CenturyLink.
Is that going to be a home game for Nebraska, or is it a road game?
It's a road game. It'll be up in Omaha.
Okay.
Right. It'll be up in Omaha, but I think I saw something earlier on Twitter that they're going to try to do a red out. But, you know, I mean, it's a good showing from both crowds. I mean, it really is. Both fan bases show up well to it.
And I would imagine with the proximity, I mean, it's not hard to get people from Lincoln to drive to that city up there. And, you know, vice versa, obviously, Lincoln is greater than Omaha, so Omahaians want to come down to Lincoln and take in the spectacle that is the Pinnacle Bank Arena. So, yeah, I mean, it completely makes sense.
Oh, if I had a dime for every Creighton Blue Jay fan of my friend of mine who asked me if I had any extra basketball tickets when it's in Lincoln, you know, I mean, they come down in droves too. So,
and as you mentioned, since the Pinnacle Bank Arena opened up and that's really become a resurgence in the Haymarket area. So they want to come and have some good food there. So makes perfect sense. What is – and I know you said that, you know, end of the – or not end of, middle of the Big Ten pack. What would be a realistic – or is it too early to make any predictions? But a realistic postseason prediction for this Nebraska team if they I'm not saying, you know, they play at the level that they, you know, every night like they played against Minnesota earlier in the week. But if they play some consistent basketball, what could they achieve?
That's a great question. At this point, I would say this team with, you know, a couple upsets in their road, they beat everybody they should beat, or most teams they should beat, and they pull off some upsets. I say this team could most likely make the NIT and not just squeaking in, but probably middle tier NIT. If they go hard and actually get a little bit traction in the Big Ten tournament, I could maybe see them on paper. They have enough talent to make the NCAA tournament, but it's going to be squeaking in, I think, on that point. They're going to have to win some style points down the road to really get in there. I said at the beginning of the season, for Tim Miles' sake, they're going to have to easily make top end NIT for this to be a successful season, I think.
Is that, like you said, that top end NIT, is that what is Miles still on a hot seat, I guess, what I'm trying to say? Does he have to show marked improvement or be terminated? I mean, we saw what happened with the last coaching hire of Sean Eichhorst. Obviously, Tim Miles. I believe Miles was an Eichhorst hire.
He was Osborne.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah, for the brief,
which window. Is an entirely different conversation altogether.
Right. So we're okay. Yeah, because that. Yeah. Okay. We'll just drop that topic. But is Coach Miles, is he on the hot seat? I mean, does he have to make a postseason tournament or be terminated? I mean, where?
If he doesn't make the NIT, I'd be surprised if he's back next year. You know, at the lowest, I would say he has to make the NIT. And if he doesn't make the NIT, there's got to be some really good reasons on the court, like maybe some injuries or whatnot, that even if that happens, there has to be enough improvement seen. You know, he's on his sixth year. The university's dumped a ton of resources into the basketball program.
Sure.
Everything's pretty much been on his shoulders for why things haven't gone a certain way. Yeah, I would say he has to make at least middle tier NIT.
Okay.
Maybe bottom, and if he makes bottom, he's got to make it through at least two or three, you know, at least two rounds of the NIT. You know, he can't just make it and then lose the first game. I don't think that would be enough.
If he... I say he, but if the team gets, you know, has that type of outstanding season, maybe they have a decent run in the Big Ten tournament and make it to the NCAA tournament, even if they don't win, which, again, would suck. And I said last year, listeners may remember last year we did the little Christmas wish list. Might have to do that again this year with the Coronation crew. A little Christmas wish list of what they hope to see with Nebraska athletics in the coming year. Might have to, you know, I know it's the end of the first week of December and time is short. Might have to work on that. But at that point last year, I said, you know, I really want Tim Miles to get that first, you know, NCAA tournament win for the Huskers. If they make the tournament and we see the similar type of ending that we saw a few years ago, is that enough to, I mean, does that show marked improvement from the last couple of years?
One thing you got to realize about that NCAA tournament run that we had a few years ago was we squeaked in there. There was a lot of wins that got us into the NCAA tournament that were barely a win at all. Statistically, you look at the end of the year, we were bottom or near bottom a majority of Big Ten statistics in terms of rankings. That team, at the end of a game, overperformed more than what they should have. What happened against Baylor, if you look at it face value, is pretty much what it was. They got blown out by a team who deserved to be in the NCAA tournament, which is why the next year was such a letdown. Not only did we lose some guys, but the numbers from the previous year really did show through the next. And, I mean, it was disappointing. And I think most people realize that. And I hope at least the administration understands that. If Nebraska makes an NCAA tournament this year, I say Miles stays on. I really do, because they will show – because to make the NCAA tournament this year, they are going to have to show enough progress to get there in the first place, which is going to be leaps and bounds over the past 2 years.
Sure.
So, I mean, just that alone, I mean, it's just that alone, you got to understand like the types of teams that make the NCAA tournament, the talent that goes into it. And
the money,
unlike football, you really do need to step back with basketball and kind of take a look at the bigger picture and really see where you're at, which I know is really tough for Husker fans to do because, so many of our fans are football first, which is perfectly understandable. In a lot of ways, I am too. But you can't look at Nebraska ball the way you do football. You really, really can't.
The scandal, can we use the word scandal, that affected so much of college basketball or, you know, a few months ago. Safe to say that Nebraska got through relatively unscathed in that because, I mean, I don't,
though we're an Adidas team.
Yeah. In fact, now thanks to Louisville, I think we're Adidas is number one. We're number one.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding. It's no, that was bad. And I remember when it came out, I didn't even have to check my heart. Deep in my heart, I knew that Nebraska was not a part of that because the teams that got in trouble were teams that.
We're
getting recruits that were, you know, and part of this was also under I-Course. I-Course was very black and white when it came to recruiting.
Sure.
He was not big on the AAU, which a lot of basketball schools are. Lincoln, Nebraska's got a good AAU program. You know how many guys we've gotten out of it? None. You know, I mean, it's just that's a gray area that was just uncomfortable for Nebraska. Now, could that lighten up with moves? You never know, but just looking, I mean, if Nebraska has Bagman and stuff like that, like we've got some of. If we do, there's some of the worst ones in the nation.
They're the poorest Bagmen out there.
Oh my God! Football and basketball, whatever sport you want, we've got to have some of the worst. Because I mean, just look at football recruiting, where we have a 4-star leave us 2 days before signing,
right?
And it's to a team that you are fairly comfortable. Oh, heck, let's just say one of them already got nailed with sanctions in the past 2 weeks. So I mean, it's how it got. Like Nebraska was so Adidas was looking at Nebraska, going, "Thank God we have you."
Our bag men are offering a Big Mac and a stick of gum. Man, that's not going to get the job done.
And that's with cash.
Through the first 10 games of the Nebraska ball season, who would you say is the MVP of the team? And who would you say, I guess, would be most improved. And if I try to keep it positive, but if you want to go, you know, like who's getting regular time that maybe needs to step it up a little bit more, you know, that's a little bit of a downside. But who, you know, give me three players who, you know, like I said, MVP through 10 games, most improved, and someone who needs, you know, a little bit more bench time or a little bit more time in the gym before he sees as much playing time as he's seeing.
Yeah. No, that's really good. There's really top three guys, and it kind of depends on the game. They've kind of gone back and forth, and I think a lot of it has to do with two of them because they're new to the program. But Glenn Watson Jr. would probably be eking him out just a little bit. Glenn Watson Jr. would probably be my MVP. I mean, he's leading the team in points per game. He's doing well, rebounds per game, assists. He's kind of our best all-around player right now. Does fairly decent on defense. James Palmer Jr. has had some really, really good games, but he's also had a couple games that weren't too great. Isaac Copeland started slow, but then again, we weren't even sure if we were going to have him right away. But he's come well. If I remember right, I think he was one of the guys who had a little surgery in the offseason, so that was a part of the reason why. But I would say Glenn Watson Jr. is probably at now MVP. In terms of guys who have improved the most, first one that pops into mind would definitely be Anton Gill. He was a transfer from Louisville. He was disappointing to me last year. He was struggling. I think he should have produced a lot more than he did. This year right now, he's averaging almost 10 points a game. He's playing finally up to the level to where a school like Louisville would recruit him. Another one who's hit or miss, Isaiah Roby's been good off the bench. He's averaging, I think, about 6.5-7 points a game. He has good games and really bad games, but he's a guy, he's going to be good down the road. And he's doing well coming off the bench. So I would say, yeah, Anton Gill and Isaiah Roby's been a big surprise.
Talk me about Jordy, because how has he improved in the offseason? And again, I'm guessing that, especially with Ed Morrow out of the picture, he got a lot more of the focus in the offseason, a lot more of the reps.
Yeah. No, Jordy's come a long way. He struggled a little bit last year. He's not the most productive guy. He's, I think, around three, four points per game average. Rebounds, he's doing pretty well. He's a big guy. He's 6'11". He's 270, I want to say.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's just a big guy, and he's learning to throw his body around. He's a sophomore, so you know that first freshman year he got thrown out into the wolves, especially in the Big Ten. Big Ten's a big conference when it comes down to it. So he is kind of a trial by fire, but he's come out pretty well, dominated pretty well in the paint, but he's still got a little ways to go. Case in point was St. John's game, where we were definitely outsizing them by far, and he was kind of non-existent to the most part. But St. John's had a good game plan. They're a better team than people realize, I think. But no, he's good. He will get better. If he doesn't improve over time, I would be shocked. But he's a big man that Nebraska hasn't had in a very long time, and he's definitely been a very welcome sight. You know, so it's kind of hard to compare him to anybody in our past, because most of our big guys were either absurdly large out of Brazil who could barely make it up and down the court, or really, really skinny from Germany or where, I can't remember. I'm just kicking guys on top of my head without saying names, but we've been very inconsistent in the paint in terms of big guy, and he's a good solid presence who just needs to keep grinding away.
And again, improvement. I mean, he's improved from last year, obviously, as you said, thrown to the wolves, and he's only a sophomore. Looking forward to more improvement from him. I mean, who knows what he could be 2 years from now as a senior? He could be a beast. He could be, you know, all Big Ten, all conference type of athlete if he keeps, you know, steadily improving. Before we get on to some football talk and all the excitement and all the buzz that happened last week, As you mentioned earlier, so one of the probably the reason that you don't make it down to Pinnacle Bank Arena as often as you did is because a little over a year ago you became a dad. So I'm also a dad, and our kids are a few months apart, and I know my son's going to be two days before Christmas, and yours is what, around 13, 14 months?
Yeah, 15.
15, okay. So, right, there's a few months difference, but still, within a year. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've faced in fatherhood?
There's a certain coordination author who would really appreciate this podcast right now. I think this would be very educational for him.
Can we congratulate? I think it's time. It's been on social media, so we can congratulate Ty and Kia.
Yeah, congratulations, Ty. He is our stellar volleyball writer for coordination. He does a phenomenal job. If you're not reading his articles, you're missing out on some great volleyball action.
But we're going to dock him a day's pay because he didn't get out the regional update today like he was supposed to, because his kids. As we record this, his kid's 28 hours old. So, no, Ty, we're kidding. Life changes and everything else. So yeah, congratulations to Ty and Kia. But yeah, what are some of those challenges, some of those hurdles that you've overcome in the first 15 months?
You don't need sleep as much as you realize.
I call bullshit on that. I think, at least in my house, it's you get it where you can get it.
Yeah, you get it, but that's my point. You don't need as much as you realize. You can run off 2-3 hours of sleep. You'd be surprised how much you can get done in a work day, especially if you have to use your brain a lot with only so many hours a week. Another thing, if you're into working out and going to the gym and stuff like that, yeah, it's time to take a few months off. It's not happening. I think it was 6 months before I hit the gym again. Trying to think of anything else. Do you work out at all?
No.
Do you know what pre-workout is?
Uh-huh.
Pre-workout's your friend. Red Bull's got nothing on it.
No.
You'd be surprised. All of a sudden, you're looking at your pre-workout going, well, I don't need... Oh man, I got to power through this, and you don't use it every day, but every once in a while, it's a good pick me up. That's just the fun end of it. But your life changes very quickly. All of a sudden, you and your spouse become as much of a team as ever, and it's I'm not gonna lie, it's fun.
It has
everything we just talked about. It's fun. I enjoy it.
I'll say this. I never got it. Even when I did go to the gym a few years ago before our son was born, and I was going at 5 in the morning, 5 days a week, I never got into pre-workout. I don't disparage those who do. Just I never probably because I never could afford to buy pre-workout, but that's a different story. My caffeine is coffee. And Brian, he would get a kick out of this. Actually, he'd probably yell at me for bringing it up. But there's a soda, or a pop, as I like to say, around here called Ski. And it's a citrus soda, but it's made with pure cane sugar instead of high fructose corn syrup. And it's amazing. Real lemon, real orange, real good is its catchphrase. So I used to drink that, by the 20 ounce, and I'd get a couple of 20 ounces in a day. But I gave up soda, so obviously I had to give up Ski. I mentioned Brian because one time when we went down to Dallas, I took him a case of Ski, and he was very appreciative.
He chose that over Pepsi?
Yeah. He loved the Ski, so much so that Kelly, his wife, made mention of it, having too much Ski in the fridge at one time or something like that. I think she liked the Ski too, but that's more speculation. I can't prove that. I just drink coffee now. And this little thing that my wife picked up called Spark, from Advocare. I don't know.
I've had that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I do that as well. But
that's not too far off from pre-workout, if I remember right.
No, I don't think
it's really not. And I started using pre-workout a little before my son was born, and that was because I was going to the gym at 4 a.m.
Oh, that's worse than 5 a.m.
Yeah, and I'm back to doing 4 a.m.s.
Ouch.
So, hey, you got to get it in somehow. It's kind of like my one way. It's my one way to get any type of workout done.
That's fair.
Throughout the week. And then I come home, and by 5:15, 5:30, he's awake, and I'm on dad duty again. So,
what did you get a lot of those early morning calls? You know, like calls of being a dad? Because I powered through with my sleep. I quote unquote didn't hear him very often. You know, those first months, I think it drove my wife crazy.
You know, actually, the first few months, my son was good with me during the day, but he wanted nothing to do with me for the first 3 or 4 months at night. Mm-hmm. Like, if I went in to comfort him in the middle of the night, wouldn't have anything to do with me. Mom come in, pass right back out.
Right.
And then once he got over that, things flipped. So now my wife sleeps mostly through the night. If he wakes up more than 2 or 3 times, then she gets up with him if she, you know, helps out with it. But for more often than not, I'm pretty much the one now. And it's funny because we have a pretty noisy room. I can sleep through everything, but once he starts whining, I normally get up.
And
I just automatically get up.
Yeah. And you know, with my wife working nights, you know, I know that I got to be responsible. So, you know, he gets up, I keep the monitor right next to my, you know, it's on the nightstand right next to my bed. And so I keep the volume up. But he doesn't, like, I've never really heard him like wake up screaming in the middle of the night. And sometimes even if he does, I'll just look at him, see if he does it for more than 20, 30 seconds, and I'll go in and check on him. But a lot of times he'll just calm down and power down and go back to sleep. What all have you guys done as a family? Like, where have you taken him? Have you been able to get out and explore the area or the town much?
We've done a little bit. In-laws are in Omaha, so if anything, we go to Omaha. Went to Steamboat last winter, family vacation, and that was kind of the first major trip. His aunt lived in Chicago for a while, and so he made a couple plane trips early on to see her.
Oh, cool.
With his mom. Yeah, the kid's been to 8 states before he was 1. I kind of looked at him and went, what the heck? But then we found out this summer that he's got a couple allergies,
uh-oh,
some food allergies. So we've kind of gone into lockdown mode.
Sure.
just until, you know, we're still trying to figure things out with that, how to deal with them. Cross-contamination is always a concern. So basically his first year or two, until he really starts speaking, we're kind of just, you know, going to places we know and trust, family houses and stuff.
Sure.
Like that. So we've pulled back on traveling. How about you?
Really, the only place that we took him was Omaha back in Memorial Day week of 2016. So he was about 5 months old, and from Illinois to Omaha was a long drive. I mean, it's a long drive normally, but when you've got a 5 month old and you've got to stop and feed and change and get out and stretch and get him out of the car seat, it became about a 10 and a half, an 11 hour drive one way. And most of that was with my wife sitting. We bought a van because of him. It was easier getting him in and out of that than my wife's charger at the time. I think she misses the charger. I do too. But this is, you know, this is more practical. Because that charger had a Hemi, but you know, I sold Chrysler, so we got a Chrysler van. So she, you know, pretty much sat in the back with him the entire way, and they would sleep, and then I'm up front, and I'm like, this is one of the more boring car rides I've ever been a part of.
Radio's down a little bit, not too loud, but yeah, that's roughly the same. I think he was 5 or 6 months old when we took him out to Colorado, and yeah, lots of stops. Lots of checking on him. My wife was phenomenal on entertaining him for a good chunk of that route. I did what I could when she drove.
Sure.
But, yeah, I mean, that age, you just kind of try to keep their focus when they're not sleeping. And you know, they're eating a lot. So, I mean, it's, yeah, my hats off to my wife for that trip.
Mobile, up and moving around, your boy?
Oh, God, he's never not mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he doesn't sit well at all. You know, after naps, we'll be able to, you know, get him to sit and watch TV for a little bit. But more often than not, I'm just, you're basically just
chasing,
following him around the house.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I have noticed, because we also have two dogs, and I've noticed that, and this is not, at least I hope this isn't coming across as child abuse, but our son plays fetch better than the dogs. Like, if you take his ball and bounce it against the wall or something, he'll go get it and then bring it back, be like, that's fun, do it again. Where if you do that, and I say, you know, my one dog, one of the dogs' name, her name is Lucky, I let Lucky go get the ball, and she'll raise her head up off the couch and look at me and put her head back down. Like, I've got no time for you, you know. this isn't important because it's seasonal, because it's December and, you know, Christmas trees and decorations and things like that. How high do you actually start the ornaments on the tree so that they can't be taken off, smashed, broken, you know, damaged in any way? Like, is it 2 feet off the ground before you're, you know, 2 feet up the tree before you actually start decorating the tree?
We didn't put up a tree this year.
Well, answers that question.
we have a small one on a table that we put a handful of ornaments on. We kept our big tree in our basement this year. I asked my wife if she was interested, and she was pretty flat, like, no. And I don't disagree with her. So
we also have bookshelves that have books, but also movies. And it got to the point of, like, you know, nobody, don't take the movie off the bookshelf. Nobody, don't chew on the movie case. So we put all the movies back in boxes and put them back in the closet. Again, that's mobility, and that's kids being kids. Anything like that? Any casualties in the house because of the child? Ty, as you're listening to this, take note.
Well, I was going to say, Ty, there's no such thing as too much baby proofing. Never. There are things you're going to be like, oh, he won't bother that. He won't look at that. Oh, he'll sniff it out, beeline for it, and knock whatever it is over. Nothing major. He loves tipping over chairs. we have some big old, you know, like antique wood, you know, just big like schoolhouse-esque wooden chairs. Likes to go up right behind it and just flip it. He's been doing it for months. Just likes to flip it. I mean, that's kind of the big thing. If anything, we have a couple dogs, two pugs, and they could care less for him. Oh. Mainly because he chases them around. Oh. Like, we keep trying to teach him nice pets, and like there's been times where he, like, I swear he was gonna, he was smiling and giggling, and he was gonna rip the pug's face off. You know, if you've got animals, they got to adapt.
They do, yeah.
They got to adapt.
And we've got our boy pretty well. I mean, he'll stand there if the dogs are, again, laying on the couch, because that's all they do. You know, he'll pet them calmly, and then he'll turn around and he'll come back a couple minutes later, and all of a sudden he'll just whack one of them on the nose. I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Don't do that.
Exactly. You know? One thing ours does do well is he does kind of play fetch with them. Like, he will bring them toys and balls and let them take it out of his hand.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually kind of cool to see, because you're like, oh, he's going to get his hand ripped off. No, it actually works out really well. So
wonderful. Tremendous. let's finish up the conversation with something that had everybody in Husker Nation talking over the weekend. I was watching the AAC... I think this was, yeah, AAC Conference Championship game Saturday, while I was helping my buddy put up lights on his house. I was the one on the roof. That's right. If you're keeping track at home, I was on my friend's roof on his slanted shingles hanging Christmas lights while he was on the ground, because I'm 6'3 and he's not. So it was beneficial to have the tall person up there. So he's feeding me scores and updates and double overtimes and things like that. And we all expected it, but there was that little news, that breaking news, scrolling text at the bottom of the screen. Late in the regulation, that said that Scott Frost was named the new Nebraska football head coach. When you got that, or when you saw it on Twitter or in the Slack, what was your initial reaction when you saw that everything that we had kind of speculated, or perhaps everything that we had thought or hoped or dreamed, had happened?
Big sigh of relief.
Yeah.
You know, because throughout last week, either coaches that I thought Nebraska was going to get, they either possibly, I think, went elsewhere, or they got major contract extensions. So if it wasn't Scott Frost, we were in for a world of hurt. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was, for me, it was relief, and then just kind of followed by, you know, kind of a euphoria. How about you?
I think it was tempered because I was on my friend's roof and I didn't want to die, like fall off. That was an actual concern. That's how steep this roof was. But I'm like, okay, that's great. But I was very calm with it until the next day when they had the introduction and the press conference, and just the way, you know, I thought Frost handled the questions. You know, some of the things when I can't remember who the particular member of the media was, but you know, when they said, "How do you think you're going to have to modify your system to fit the Big Ten?" And he says, "Well, I'm hoping they have to modify, you know, their plan for us." You know, things like that. He comes in a little bit of swagger because he's had success, and you see what he did at UCF. But he's I don't want to say hometown, but you know, he's homegrown. He's homegrown talent. He understands that he's been elsewhere, you know, to play, but he also played for Nebraska. He won a championship for Nebraska, the last national championship. Obviously, there was the conference championship a few years later. But then he went out and coached, and he learned from some of the best. And now he's bringing all of that cumulative knowledge back to Lincoln. So when he made a comment like that, and you know, kind of joke, but kind of serious, and like I said, a little bit of that, I don't want to call it arrogance or cockiness, but a little bit of that confidence. You know, that's not... I'd say that was a step above coach speech. He could have said, well, you know, he could have towed the coach speak line and said, oh, you know, we're going to, you know, start really heavily looking at some film and seeing what they're doing and how to adjust. But he came in with the sense of, I've got something that I know works. They're not doing it. So we're going to make them change how they play football. When he said that, I popped. Man, I got a big kick out of that. But nothing, I think, meant as much to me as seeing the video. And there are a couple versions of the video, but I like the official Huskers one. And you can see it in the write-up here. I know you've seen it on Coronation already. The video of him meeting all the Husker lettermen, you know, 100, 200, something like that, before that press conference, you know, that... They had 12, 18 hours to, you know, get that put together, and they all file in there, and he meets them, and he appreciates, you know, shows his gratitude and his appreciation, and he says, good to see you boys, you know, kind of comes in with that, and obviously, you know, a lot of these players, you know, former players are older than him, but he comes in as their peer, you know, being a former Husker. He says, we got to get this thing back, and I need your help. I don't think any of the former, you know, four, I'll say three, maybe I, you know, Riley didn't, Bellini, I'm certain didn't, and Callahan didn't. Nobody had that. Nobody had those roots. Nobody had those connections to the history and to the tradition. So he said, I'm going to need your help. And he even made the joke of, you know, I want your ideas unless they're bad, you know, things like that. Very lighthearted, but serious approach to it, and well received. I mean, I said before on the show that there's going to be one hire that they can make that's going to unite the fan base, and they made that hire. I'm thrilled. I really am so excited with what the future holds for the program, and I hope you know, I know it's a 7-year contract. My hope is that if things start slow, if he starts with the foundation and doesn't go, you know, 13-0 after his second year, I hope the fans don't turn on him, because we kind of have a tendency to do that. As a fan base, we kind of get a little split and say, you know, oh, he's not getting the job done, we gotta fire him, you know. But I'm so excited, and I think he's got the support from, you know, the alumni, the former players, things like that. I think they made a good call, and I, like I said, I'm pretty well tickled that he's back in Lincoln.
Yeah, now all he has to do is, you know, like you said, win.
Yeah.
No, I think Husker fandom will give him slack. He didn't need to come back here.
No, he didn't.
He could have stayed at UCF. He could have gone to another place where it would have been tougher for him to succeed. I mean, there's some pretty big programs out there right now in some pretty rough situations. I think everybody has their coaches now, but he could have taken any one of those Power Five positions, and he didn't. And I think he did it for all the right reasons, and I think he should have all the tools. You know, people say, you know, the 90s will never happen again, and that's fine, but we just need to get back to respectability. And I think he can do that.
And look at how he and some of the other coaches that he's brought in have already started attacking the recruiting trail.
Holy cow, have they?
It didn't take long. And I know that this has been, you know, much discussed, much talked about, not just from Coronation, but, you know, most Husker fans, is Iowa Western Community College, right there across, you know, in Council Bluffs. That was essentially that was supposed to be a built-in pipeline, and I believe by Osborne, who, you know, was, I don't know, set it up. I feel like I read somewhere that he was somewhat integral in that, in establishing that program, but that's like the first place they went, and that's a no-brainer, because other schools have been picking up that talent for a long time, and yet right there, nobody from Lincoln decided to make that trip up to Council Bluffs and see what they had to offer.
It's definitely not too far away from Manhattan.
Yeah. You're right.
I think they've had Kansas State program off, I think, off that school some years.
So I'm pumped, and I know it's not the traditional option offense that you know, Husker fans are used to seeing, but I think it was Haas that made the observation that it's an offense with options out of every, you know, out of every formation, every play call, you can do various things. So it's not the traditional triple option, but it's an offense with options. He's bringing in, you know, or looking to bring in some big talent. Terry Wilson's a name. I think somebody went and talked with Bookie, you know, trying to get some of these guys that, you know, Bookie was a Husker commit and then he decommitted, and maybe trying to get him back. Bookie's a recent, you know, as of the last week or so, now a 5-star cornerback recruit. So he's not wasting any time. I don't know if he's going to be able to coach UCF in their bowl game. If that works, you know, out for him and for that team, great. If I know that he doesn't also doesn't want to step in as a distraction. So it seems like he's got, I don't know, all the, you know, his head and his heart are in the right place, and he doesn't want to do anything that's going to cause either, you know, that's going to be a detriment to either Nebraska or UCF. And that's about all you can ask.
No, I agree. In fact, as we're recording this, the Home Depot, whatever awards is going on, he won Coach of the Year.
He did. And, you know, it's funny because I think some of the early write-ups said Nebraska coach Scott Frost, and somebody on Twitter took issue with that, and I saw that Haas commented, like, I actually agree that with the issue that he didn't earn that at Nebraska, he earned that at UCF, and so it should say, I don't know if they say former UCF head coach or however they could, you know, word it, but yeah, he could be Coach of the Year next year at Nebraska. He's Coach of the Year this year at University of Central Florida. So, but yeah, props to him.
I agree.
I'm excited for, you know, what they bring. And, you know, I do feel, and it's funny because right there at coronation.com, we had a, article about this today about looking forward at the depth chart for quarterback, and I do feel like it puts Tanner Lee in a real bind because I feel like Frost is going to want. I mean, he's talking to Terry Wilson, who's a JUCO transfer. He's, you know, talking to other players. It's like, who, you know, does he sit down with Tanner at some point and say, "Man, we appreciate what you've done, and you're more than welcome to stick around, or if you want to go to the NFL or, you know, try your luck at the draft," things like that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds for Tanner Lee or even a POB. It's going to be real interesting the next few months as we get into the spring practices.
Yeah, I mean, our offensive outlook is probably going to change considerably, at least a lot faster than it has historically with coaching changes. You know, Pelini took time to transfer, you know, what he wanted to do from Callahan, and Riley took what he had and utilized it to what he could for at least the first couple of years with Tyree Armstrong. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a lot faster with Scott Frost. Is that fair to say?
And it makes sense. I mean, at one point, or in one hand, I'd say you play the cards you're dealt, but at the same time, you know, if you're, you know, playing Go Fish, you know, like we will with our children eventually someday. And you'd be like, "Got any threes?" And he hands you a three because that's, if you can get it to better, if you can get I think Frost needs the best player to fit his scheme. And I don't know, you know, again, Nebraska fans are hungry. We don't want to necessarily wait. I think there are a lot of people who think that this is the second coming. And for Scott Frost it is, but not for Jesus. you know, who think that with his return that we're going to see immediate changes, and we need to temper our expectations, and I think we just need to, you know, wait and kind of hit on cruise control, I guess, the wait and see approach, and see what he has planned, because like I said, we don't know what's going on in the man's head. We know that he's recruiting speed. He wants to, you know, he wants to move fast, and hopefully he wants to build up the linemen, because that's going to drive Hoss crazy.
Yeah, it will. You're going to get some good articles out of Hoss here in the future.
I think so. I think
some really good articles.
he's already starting to break down UCF films and things Perfect. Like that. So.
As long as he stays away from the defense, I think it'll be worthwhile.
Who, Scott or Haas?
Haas. Oh. Stay away from UCF defense.
Yeah, and here's another weird thing, because UCF has their new head coach in the two-year offensive coordinator at Missouri, who took Missouri's, you know, 125th-ranked offense and turned it into a top-10 offense in 2 years. So that's kind of interesting as well, and the fact that Missouri is going to a bowl game and Nebraska is not really has me a little bit dead inside. So I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. But Nebraska will be back. I'm confident in saying that. I think everything, all the pieces are in place to do it and do it right.
Nope, I fully agree.
Well, on that note, when we agree, folks, that means it's time to end the show. And Patrick, thanks for staying up late, because as you said, you go to the gym at 4 in the morning, and you have a 15-month-old, so sleep is at a premium, and I'm keeping you up late, so I appreciate the time. But let's get together again in a few weeks and talk some more Nebraska ball, and maybe Haas will be available after you know, school is out, and he can come play with his friends, and we can have a good conversation and see where Nebraska men's basketball is sitting around Christmas or around the first of the year.
Sounds good. I thoroughly enjoyed it tonight. Thanks.
All right. That is Patrick Gerhart. Check his stuff out on coronation.com. Where are you at on social media that people can throw you a follow and keep up with you?
Twitter is at Patrick Gerhart. That's at PatrickGerhart. The best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect. So get a hold of him. and but not too much. Like, send him YouTube clips, YouTube videos of lullabies so the poor guy can get some sleep. So that's Patrick Gerhardt. My name is Greg Mahochko, and we remind you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. Go Big Red. And Patrick, will you do the honors as Haas started us on a new trend last week by saying, win the damn offseason?
Win the damn offseason.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.